Here he is again, Daybreak's creator and host, Rich Rider.
Good morning to you. Start your day off bright and shiny. Get up off your little hiney and begin your happy day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, here to 1370 AM WBTN. The time is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock, 66 degrees outside. On this beautiful day here, and I am delighted to have Skip Crego in here with me. And Skip is from the Southern Vermont Amateur Radio Club. Good morning, Skip. How are you?
Good morning, Rich. I'm fine.
I'm delighted you are here because, you know, being in radio, working in radio, and one of my coworkers, what's his name? Ben Ronalds, my chief operator here, really into this. Now, years ago, when I was a young man, I remember my father had a shortwave radio and a Citizens Band radio. And I remember listening to that, you know, gurgle, garbage noise and Morse code and different languages. And I would say, how come I'm getting this guy speaking in a different language? And my father said, well, he could be in Czechoslovakia. He could be, you know, you're listening. And I said, wow, that really opened my eyes. Has that interest still stayed there with radio and the young people?
Well, it's tough. There's a lot of competition for the interest and activity of the young people these days. What with the internet, with all that type thing going on, it's very tough to get youngsters interested in this particular hobby. And it's a shame because there's quite a bit of options there for them to participate in. There's satellite radio. There's just plain talking back and forth all around the world. But we're doing well. We'd like to see more youngsters get in, like Ben. Ben's come in and he's really hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's a fascinating hobby because you can literally contact people around the world if everything is just right. You can do this. Now, how does this work, Skip? How does this ham? We hear ham operators, and give us the basic nuts and bolts of how it works.
Well, the basic nuts and bolts are, first of all, the best way to do it is to get affiliated or associated with a club like ours, because we can teach you. We can give you all the necessary instructions. We can help you pass the test, because you have to be federally licensed to operate ham radio. And your license grade will determine what options are available to you and to how far you can reach out and get around the world, because your license grade controls what frequency bands you're allowed to operate on. For instance, just a couple of weeks ago, I upgraded my license, and it gave me access to some of the high frequency nets. And my first contact was a fellow over in Serbia, which was very, very interesting. I just went on and listened around on through the frequency range, kind of like changing the channels on your TV or tuning your radio to different bands. And I heard this fellow talking, calling out, looking for people to talk to, and fortunately, I was able to get through to him, and we chatted for a little while, and it was very interesting.
That is truly interesting, and what I want to give you one of the experiences how a ham operator, radio operator, and the things that they can do. When I was, I guess about 14 or 15, my brother was in Vietnam, and he had a walkie-talkie, the big old walkie-talkies, and we're sitting home one night. The phone rings, and it's a guy out in Oklahoma. He said, are you Kenneth Ryder? My father said, yes. He said, I have your son on the line here. He's in Vietnam. He said, then I just picked him up, and he asked if I would call you, and he said, I'll patch you through. The only thing is, when you get done speaking, you have to say over. And he says, and I'll relay that to him. And, of course, there were no speaker phones back then, you know, and it was so exciting that we all got to talk to my brother in Vietnam. And here he is on a walkie-talkie, and this ham operator picked up his signal, and they just started talking back and forth. And he said, gee, can I place a call to home? And the guy was generous enough to say, sure. And that was so exciting. I mean, just to have something like that happen. There are so many good things that ham radio operators do. How do they get involved with this, and what are some of the things they do?
Well, aside from that, there's still a lot of that that goes on, supporting military and people stationed overseas and providing communications for them when the conditions are right.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of that is influenced by what's going on up there in the upper reaches of the atmosphere, stratosphere, right. Ionosphere, that type of thing, because some frequencies tend to be line of sight. Some frequencies go up and bounce around and come back down to Earth, and obviously the weather and all those type conditions up there can greatly affect that. So one day you may be talking to somebody in Australia, just like you're standing alongside them, and the next day you may not be able to talk to the guy down the street. That's kind of what makes it a lot of fun, a lot of interest.
Can you tell?
I'm sorry.
Can you tell by when you're on the air via the weather conditions how your signal's going to be? Like if I read a weather report, can you actually tell, well, gee, Tuesday night would be a good night to try to reach Serbia?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple different things you can do. There are stations throughout the world called beacon stations, and they just broadcast a steady prescribed signal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what frequency they're on. So you can tune into them and see if you can pick them up. Oh, hey, I can pick up this beacon down in Australia. So that means I can probably talk to other guys in Australia. So you change your frequency a little bit, get off the beacon frequency, but something close to it, and put out your call. Say, hey, anybody home? Anybody want to talk to me? That type of thing. So you can do that. Also, there are various charts and forecasts that are printed by American Radio Relay League and other organizations that kind of forecast what's going on weather-wise and what the sun is doing and how that's affecting things and that like that. So
that was my next question, because sunspots can solar flares can wreak havoc with radio operators, can't they?
Yes, they can.
Yeah.
And conversely, they can also help in
really?
Other ways. So so it's very interesting. But I wanted to get back to something you mentioned a little bit ago as far as activity of the hams and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Our club here locally is active in emergency communications. We help out Red Cross. We help out various organizations that are doing things like, remember the Tour de Cure, the bike race and
yes.
all that? We used to provide communications for that all the time, following the bicyclists around and like that in case anything happened. We could be right there with emergency aid. The various walkathons, that type of thing. We're mm-hmm. also very active in the RACES organization, which is Radio Amateur Emergency Service, and that's tied in with FEMA on the state level.
Okay.
So if there's ever any kind of natural disaster or anything that where FEMA's called in down here in the area, we're activated, and we can provide communications from site to site to site, because a lot of times, you know, the first thing that happens is the phones go out or the
right.
or the power goes out and that type of thing.
Right.
We also have a group of fellows that are active in what was called Skywarn. We work with the people of NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, out of the Albany office. And every time there's a storm or something, we're up on the net. And we help confirm their radar picture. We tell them, hey, there's lines down here, there's flooding there, there's hail, that type of thing.
Really?
So,
yeah,
so there's a lot of that that goes on.
Wow. That is really pretty interesting. So, and another interesting aspect of this is that when you do make contact with a person, whether it be in Sacramento, California, or Honolulu, or wherever, there's a little postcard exchange, isn't there?
Yeah, there's what they call a QSL card, and you don't do this all the time. You can do it. A lot of people, that's an interesting part of the hobby as far as collecting them, because some of them get very artistic. Some of them some of them are humorous, some of them are serious. But you can also get recognition and awards for verified contacts for people in every state in the union, or in every little geographical area in the union, all counties, that type of thing. So that's kind of an interesting thing. There's also another thing that we have participated in, what they call special event stations. For instance, during the car show here in Bennington, we've historically set up a station. And then people contact us, and we talk about the special event going on here, the Bennington Car Show, et cetera, a little bit about Bennington. But if they send us, you know, self-addressed stamped envelopes, we send them back a big certificate that's got a pretty picture of Bennington and the car show and like that as an acknowledgement that they actually talked to us.
Wow.
And that goes the other way around. There's some clubs that, for instance, there's a group that specializes in broadcasting from all the lighthouses around the country. And they give you a great big beautiful certificate. Then every time you get to them when they're at a particular lighthouse, you can get a little sticker that goes on your certificate that acknowledges that you contacted them at that particular lighthouse. You know,
that is really interesting.
There's a lot of stuff that goes on along those.
Now, if a young person wanted to get involved with this, is it very expensive? Can you get involved with ham radio operation? Can a family afford it? You know, what does it take to get involved in this? You know, naturally after you're licensed,
mm-hmm.
okay, because we want to make sure everybody does this correctly. And you know, is it an expensive ordeal?
No, it's like any other hobby. You can spend an awful lot at it, or you can get by and get started fairly reasonably. There are all over the country quite frequently what they call ham fests, which are like a tag sale for ham operators.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to one of these ham fests and get a good basic setup, you know, for a couple hundred dollars if you wanted to spend that much. You can also get what they call an HT, which is a handheld, like your walkie-talkie you were talking about.
Right.
Most popular use of those around is on a 2-meter frequency, which is what most of the mobile operations are. You'll see most people with a ham antenna on their car like that. They're talking generally 2 meters.
Break that down. How far is 2 meters? For
2 meters is primarily a line of sight type frequency, but there's also all over the country, and we've got our own here in Bennington. We sponsor what they call repeaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a station that you can talk into, and then it will automatically rebroadcast your message over a wider geographical area, so it gives you considerable reach. The repeater here in Bennington happens to be up at my house, which is on a ridge on the west side of town, and I can stand there and watch the airplanes going in and out of Albany Airport and like that. So we've got a good reach on our repeater, and it goes over, covers the whole Albany area, covers up north to Manchester, covers down south, quite a ways down south. Depends. There's sometimes a little topography might get in the way. It depends on what kind of rig you've got in your car. But it's very popular and widely used. But you can get your license and get operating on 2 meters for, you know, under $100.
Really?
So it's cheaper than a good set of golf clubs.
Probably a lot less frustrating, too. Yeah, I would imagine. So it's a unique hobby, and it is really interesting. Now, I remember when I went to school, there was actually, you know, radio clubs in high schools and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I don't think there are many of those around today.
Not a whole bunch of them. Not as many as there used to be, unfortunately. We did have an instructor here at Bennington High School that was very active in radio, and he taught it as part of his science class and stuff, and allowed youngsters to get in and through the class, get their license and things. He now is up at Burton, and he's active up there, but it's on an informal basis. It's mm-hmm. not part of the formal curriculum. But any youngsters in the areas, we'd love to have them come. Our meetings, we meet the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bennington Library at 7 o'clock. And if you're just interested, if you want to find out a little bit more about it, stop by. We're welcome to have you. If you just come by and see what's going on and get a chance to talk to people and say, well, I'm really not interested, I'm going on, that's fine too. But mm-hmm. if you want to come and really get into it, We'd love to have you.
So now, obviously, you don't set up shop in a library. What goes on at the meetings? You know, are there dues involved?
Well, for our particular club, the annual membership is $20,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, very reasonable. What we do is we discuss various things going at the meetings. You know, hey, this is what I did last week. This is who I was able to talk to. People, when the members give demonstrations on rigs and this unique setup, that unique setup, anything that happens to interest us at the time. It's not regimented. It's fairly loose. We're an informal group.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a wide range of interests. We've got people that like to do a lot of satellite work. We've got other people that do digital work, which is you actually transmit through a computer, sending digital signals in and out, which is almost like teletype, but it's over the air. We've got people, some people do radio controlled aircraft, planes, helicopter, little models, things like that. And so we can be talking about most anything, any particular meeting.
Wow, that is really, that sounds really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something great for young people to get involved with and to learn from. And I suppose if even somebody's having a problem, you guys can probably hash it out with your expertise. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, and we teach classes. We enjoy putting together a class of people that are interested in the hobby. We recently did one for actually a lot of employees from the Vermont Healthcare Service, because they're doing a net. The Vermont Emergency Management is doing a net, tying all the local healthcare centers together, mm-hmm. health department centers. And so we conducted a class for them so they could get their licenses and operate. They've got an HF net that goes all over the state now, ties them all together. Also, all the hospitals. We've got a station that we operate at Southern Vermont Hospital that ties all the hospitals together in event of emergency, that type of thing. Actually, there's something else I'd like to get into, because it's one of the prime reasons I came here today. This coming weekend, we have an event called Field Day. It's a national event. It is a combination of an emergency exercise and a contest.
Okay.
Our club sets up on Vail Road where used to be the Vail Nurseries.
Okay.
And what we do is we set up stations and we operate on emergency power for 24 hours. And the goal is, one, to give you the annual exercise of setting up your emergency station and going through, making sure all your gear is right and all that type of thing. And also, it's a contest to see how many other stations you can talk to in that 24-hour period.
Wow.
And our little club in Bennington, we're kind of proud about this. We've come out consistently in the top 10% nationwide, and sometimes even a little bit higher than that.
Really?
In our category, yeah. So we're very happy about that. And it's a great opportunity for anybody to like to see ham radio in operation to come on up. Matter of fact, we can set you down and let you talk to people.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And we're encouraged to do that. And we encourage you to do that. Stop by anytime. We'll be on the air from 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon to 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
Wow, full so, 24 hours.
So it's 24 hours straight through.
And where is this held?
This is we set up on Vail Road. You go up and go out Vail Road, and you can't miss it. Up through Old Bennington, mm-hmm. right? And go past the monument, and then mm-hmm. out Fairview Street, and then it turns into Vail Road. And we're on the left, what used to be the Vail Nurseries until they've gone out of business, but they've been kind enough to let us still use the facility. And you can't miss it. It looks like a big circus out there. We've got really? We set up towers. Well, the tallest one is about 30, 40 feet tall.
Wow!
And so it's a lot of fun. You'll see all the cars, all the people.
That is really amazing. Now, when you say use emergency power, are these batteries or generators?
What we do is we use a generator for the primary power for all our receivers and transmitters, that type of thing. We do use some battery powered equipment for communicating from station to station, because mm-hmm. we spread ourselves out so that we don't get interference from one broadcasting frequency to another.
Okay. So how many of these ham operators? So it's not just like one setup; it's multiple setups.
No, it's multiple setups, right? Okay. We operate essentially four stations. We'll send on different frequency bands, and some are aimed at local. Matter of fact, we're going to have a satellite station set up this year. So we'll be talking. What you do is you broadcast up to a satellite, and then that bounces the signal back, repeats it back to Earth, somewhere on the other coast or somewhere around, and. So it's worked out well.
Now, something interesting, too, that I thought was kind of going by the wayside is you're still required to know Morse code.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not. That is a change. And quite honestly, for me, I'm grateful for that. There are others that are not. Morse code is no longer a requirement. It's still an active, interesting part of the hobby. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people that still use it. Morse code is still one of the ways you can get through in really adverse conditions,
right,
that you can't necessarily get through with voice or something else. A lot of times Morse code is good in that type of emergency situation, but it is not a requirement any longer.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Skip Crego of the Southern Vermont Radio Club here, and that is this weekend, Saturday 2 p.m. to Sunday 2 p.m., a full 24 hours, and it's out on the Vail Road, and it's on the left-hand side. You can't miss it. Once you get out there, You'll definitely be able to spot it. And it's great. No charge for this.
No charge.
We'll learn all about ham radio operation and how important it is. And, you know, because if there ever is a real disaster here in our area, you guys are going to be vital for providing and guidance to get help in here and the situation and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
One of the prime things, for instance, with I mentioned Red Cross, what we do there is put operators at their various sites to give them logistical communications, so they can say, "Hey, we need 10 more cots over here. Mm-hmm. We need 20 more meals over there." That type of thing.
Boy, that's invaluable.
It helps.
Yeah,
it helps.
It really. That's great. And I want to thank you so much for coming on here today, Skip. It's hard to believe that a half hour has gone by like this.
Oh, yes, it is.
So once again, I encourage everybody this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. That is the 23rd and 24th. And it's out on the Vail Road. And hopefully you'll have a great turnout and let us know.
Well, we certainly will. And we invite everybody to come out. Bring your youngsters. It's great. They always find it interesting. And we can give them a chance to talk on the radio to somebody in some other part of the country if they'd like.
Boy, that's fascinating. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All righty. That's Skip Kriego right there on 1370 AM WBTN. My name is Rich Ryder. Coming up next, your news at the bottom of the hour. Then we are going to draw the winner for today's Auric Vacuum. The challenge is over, but the winner has to be selected here today. So that's coming up in the next half hour here on 1370 AM WBTN, the station that brings to you the roots of radio, information, education, and voices for our community, 1370 AM.